could start with was the third in the list, and I'll make sure that list is posted on the website. So here's what it says. It says, try to contact the aliveness of the immediate presenting moment. Then look to see how that aliveness gives way to the sameness of the conducted. So it's this twofold process. In every moment, you could say, appearances arising anew. In every moment, there's a kind of a starting over. You know, I think at one point I may have mentioned the word forgiveness. It's as though, you know, forgiveness has this quality of just wiping the slate clean. In the next moment, everything is new again. You know, forgiveness is about newness. So it's a kind of a forgiveness, although that may not work in every instance, but it is the absolute newness, the aliveness of the immediate presenting moment. And what happens is that we turn that aliveness into sameness, the sameness of the conducted. That's the phrase that Rinpoche used and that this exercise points toward. There's a laying out of the temporal order. So we've talked about that before. I talked about it just a few minutes ago. Time is always getting sorted out into past, present, and future and into a temporal order that we then inhabit. And in that order that we inhabit, there are causes that have set up the perfect situation, present situation, and there are consequences. There are events that are going to arise in the future, and you know, we live our lives in that order, and you know, that's the order that's been conducted. And so one of the points that Rinpoche makes is that yes, there is that conducted order, but there is also the conducting of the order. And in that conducting, there is a fundamental knowing, because you could say everything that's been set up in the temporal order is an expression of a deeper knowing. So in the paragraph that Caroline broke out, the first step is choose and cherish knowledge in all appearance. I think it's very much related to the aliveness of the immediate presenting moment. In that aliveness, there is a complete knowing. The moment it scatters out, the moment it spreads out into the temporal order, as it says here, the next bead on the temporal string of beads, the moment that happens, then that possibility for complete knowledgeability disappears. And so one of the other statements in the list that Carolyn pointed out is cut each instant rejection of knowledgeability. So in each moment, we conduct an order in which the original knowledgeability disappears. And that knowledgeability has to do with the inward dimension of time and aliveness that stays in contact. The aliveness is the knowing. You know, you could actually point out three different things here. There's the aliveness of the immediate presenting moment. There is the knowledge inherent in all appearance. And there is boundless love, because there's no separation. You know, none of that has been set up. But in the next moment, everything gets set up. So that's what this exercise is talking about. That's a lot, and it's not as though you have to try to figure it all out or puzzle it all out. But as we practice, those possibilities could kind of remain present in your mind. So let's go back over the instruction, and in fact, maybe I'll combine a couple of things here. So just, it's very simple. Try to contact the aliveness of the immediate presenting moment, and then look to see how that aliveness gives way to the sameness of the conducted, in which knowledge has been rejected, love is not available, and the simple aliveness is not available. So that aliveness is the inward dimension of time, and it leads toward a different knowing. So that's a different vision of reality. You know, more and more I've become interested in the fact that, you know, what does it mean to say that TSK is a new vision of reality? Well, this is a new vision of time. And it doesn't mean that we see time off in the distance in a different way. It means that time manifests, if that's the right word, time manifests differently in each moment. So the aliveness of the immediate presenting moment and how that gives way to the sameness of the conducted. Let's practice with that for a little longer than we usually do, let's say 5 minutes or so, and then we'll come together and discuss it. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Okay, well, let's come together. Okay, well, several people are already commenting. That's nice. Gives us something to work with. Somebody's whistling. Oh, that stopped. Okay. Okay, let's take a look at David's comment from the chat room. Exhale to clear all the continuity of my identity and position, releasing the tightness of me. Space awareness happens. Fullness of embodiment and the sensual abound. Some thoughts appear, but not pulling me at first. They are diaphanous. But as thinking proceeds, the tug of interest narrows my focus, and I'm carried away from point to point. Okay. I was struck, too, by the sense of embodiment. One of the points that Caroline pulled out of that paragraph is a point that I personally find really, really important. Inhabit what is happening. And the way we inhabit, at least in large measure, is to start with the body. It doesn't have to be the body, but let's say embodiment in the broader sense. But David says, space awareness, fullness of embodiment, the sensual abound. And so then your point, David, is that thoughts come out of that, but the question is, are they going to pull you somewhere else? And you say the tug of interest carries you away. It narrows your focus, and it carries you away from that, let me call it, although you didn't call it this, let me call it the inwardness, the inward dimension. Okay, I'm going to leave that, but people should feel free to comment on it. I'm just going to turn now to what Sudipa wrote. When I view every molecule of the air or space as the presence of the benevolent forces, there is a presence added to everything else. And that presence adds an immediate aliveness to all the nuances of that moment, without any specific one being zoomed in by the awareness. So I'm not sure exactly what you mean by zoomed in, Sudhi, but I'm going to just add to what you've written here, the connection to what David wrote, and I guess what I commented, and that is, back up here, and that is a different kind of presence. So you write, there is a presence added to everything else, and you understand that as a presence of benevolent forces. So TSK doesn't really talk in terms of benevolent forces, but again, in this passage that Caroline singled out, there is the possibility of boundless love. And surely that has to do with benevolence. Okay. So Michael has written something. He writes, at first I thought that to remain present, I had to push away thoughts, anticipations, memories. Then it occurred to me that it was all alive, and I was free to enjoy whatever arose. I felt I could remain present with whatever arose, including being a seat of awareness. So there's another term, I'm not sure exactly how you're using it, a seat of awareness. When I read that, I thought, a seed of awareness, and that might also work, but that's not what you wrote. You wrote seat of awareness. So, you know, there's something kind of magical about the notion of aliveness, it seems to me. It ties into presence, it ties in perhaps to benevolence and love, it ties into knowledge, and it's kind of our gateway. Again, in the instructions that Rinpoche gave that Caroline singles out, he says, inhabit what is happening, direct your caring, discipline your appreciation, activate a boundless love. And all of that really comes out of, to focus it in on what we've been exploring, all of that comes out of an appreciation for the possibility of aliveness, of activating the inward dimension of time. You know, it's not just that we have a temporal order that's been conducted with its own field communique, and we need to open that up and conduct a different order. That's not exactly, it seems to me, the way to think about it. It's more that we need to discover, or we are invited to discover the conducting itself, the aliveness that's active in the conducting. And when we can do it that way, and this ties into Michael's comment, when we can do it that way, we don't have to go anywhere else. We don't have to let go, you might say, or push away, that's what Michael says, our thoughts, our anticipations, our memories. We just need to go to what's most alive, to direct our appreciation, or discipline our appreciation. That's an interesting thought. How do we discipline our appreciation? To direct our caring, discipline our appreciation, inhabit what's happening, activate a boundless love that leads us to the inwardness of time. Now, Kathleen asks a question here. She asked it privately, but I'm sure it's a question for everybody. How does this tie into suffering? Well, I'd love to hear what other people have to say about that. You know, I don't feel as though the appropriate role for me to take is as the source of all knowledge here. If that's the way you approach it, then, you know, clearly you are rejecting the knowledgeability that's available within the experience. You're locating it somewhere. I'm not saying you do take that role, but I'm just saying there's a temptation in the structure that we have here to be a question and answer kind of thing, because I'm leading the sessions. So I would love to have other people reflect on that. And
I missed the last word.
Suffering.
Tie into what? Tie into what?
Suffering. Suffering.
Separate.
No, suffering. Interesting.
Suffering.
Yeah, suffering. How does it tie into suffering? In other words, I think I'm going to take that question in a certain direction, but as I say, I encourage people to reflect on it. For there to be suffering, we have to accept that there's suffering. We have to identify a certain reaction or a certain situation as filled with suffering. And that identification or reaction is there. It's, again, it's not something to be pushed away, but more fundamental is the unknown, as it says in this paragraph we've been looking at. We can awaken to the prior unknown. And in the prior unknown, before a temporal order has been set up, suffering has not yet been set up. In the inwardness of time, there is no suffering, and there is no one who suffers, and so on. So Sudhi says, in suffering, one zooms in to a particular story, to a specific story, she says. And so we have an interesting vocabulary, Sudhi. I like this. We already had zoomed in before, but Sudhi says, in suffering, one zooms into a specific story and multi-dimensions or possibilities are zapped out. So we zoom in and zap out. I like that. Yes, you know, this issue or this possibility for multiple dimensionalities, which we've talked about repeatedly, you know, that's part of what gets lost the moment you create a particular order. And you can't have suffering until you're in a particular order. So here's a comment from Karen. I appreciate very much when this practice is arising by itself in daily life, moments of aliveness and deep appreciation, as if someone is reminding me of the fullness of life. There's a kind of holiness. Well, that's very nice. Thank you. Yes, you know, that it's, I don't know how everybody feels about this. You know, and I certainly don't want to suggest that this is always present for me, always alive for me. Of course, it can operate in at different levels, but it is just so important to be able to take these possibilities that the TSK vision presents and bring them into our daily lives, because the possibility for transforming our experience toward the TSK vision or in light of the TSK vision or as a manifestation of the TSK vision, that possibility is there in every moment. And that's why we can talk about the inward dimension of time. You know, the outward dimension of time is that things move along. You know, one, you know, moment, 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 the next bead on the string of beads. But the inward dimension is a kind of always available possibility. And so, Karen, when you describe that as a kind of holiness or fullness of life or deep appreciation, when that awakens for you, you really can say that something of the vision is present. So that's very kind, very sweet. So here's a comment from David. When I exhale to clear the continuity of my identity and position, that's what you described before, David. When I exhale to clear all the continuity of my identity and position, releasing the tightness of me, I release any suffering I'm experiencing. In that releasing, space happens, and the pain that loomed in the... He starts speaking another language here, carried away by the ecstasy of the moment. In the what?
Forefront.
Oh, forefront. Thank you. I'm sorry, back. I release any suffering I'm experiencing. In that releasing, space happens, and the pain that loomed in the forefront becomes placed in more open space. It lessens. But I became aware when we were practicing just now of something that I'm going to be involved in later in the day that I'm not really looking forward to. And what I became aware of was a certain embodied feeling associated with that. And in the first moment, that feeling had a certain quality, you could say, of pain or suffering. But embodying it, that shifts, that changes. So embodying is a practice, you know, we are invited to embody our experience or embody ourselves, I guess, all the time in many, many different practices, but many, many different traditions even. But here the sense is that what we're doing is inhabiting this inward dimension, this prior unknown. And so, and David, you refer to it here also as a releasing space. So the pain that loomed in the forefront becomes placed in more open space and lessens. Good. Michael writes, perhaps suffering is unavoidable if we feel compassion towards others and are unable to affect the conditions of the people about whom we care, ourselves included. But perhaps we can skim off the elements that originate with the need to control what we cannot control. But suffering will return and give us incentive to become more modest about our roles in life. So there is a way in which that's true. Suffering is central in people's lives, and it's true for the people we care about, and it's true for us. But TSK really is pointing to the prior unknown. It doesn't mean that suffering becomes unreal, but it becomes real in the way that the temporal order sets up. It becomes real because we conduct it as real. And we can't not conduct it as real, but we can conduct our conducting differently. We can let what's conducted remain unknown, even as it's real. Even as it's real. And there's some wonderful clues in this paragraph we've been looking at about, you know, what does that feel like? Because we're clearly not talking about an intellectual understanding. So what is it? You know, feeling is not quite the right word either, but well, let's just look at what's said here. Caring, appreciation, and love. And awakening. And another word with that same flavor to it is cherishing. So when we find that it's not as though, you know, it's a very interesting point. Maybe it's a good place to stop. When we read in different texts, this comes up in Buddhist texts too, when we read, you know, we can develop, we can cherish, we can care, we can appreciate, we can love. I don't think the point is to try to make ourselves have those feelings. You know, to imitate what it would be like to feel in that way. And in the same way, the point is not to pretend, or, you know, I don't mean pretend in a really negative way, but the point is not to try to create some feeling of compassion or love. What matters more is that those moments in our experience that have that quality help us to awaken to a realm in which that's the natural way of being. It doesn't deny the truth of suffering, but it puts it in a different perspective, or it gives us a new vision of what it means to suffer. So, Kathleen, thank you for asking that question. I think it encouraged us all to reflect on that, and we can, you know, because suffering does show up again and again and again in our lives and the lives of others, it gives us a wonderful opportunity to practice. Okay, so that's it. We start next week, and I may write a few paragraphs, and this time I'll post them in the usual way with Kyle, something to get us moving. I usually don't do that for the first class because, you know, in theory, people can join us, but we're so far into this whole process, I don't expect anybody new to be joining us. In fact, I've been discouraging people from joining the class at this point. In the fall, we'll start something brand new, and I've actually been thinking quite a bit about what we'll do in the fall, but that's a topic for later. We certainly don't have to talk about it now. So I may write a few paragraphs. We're moving into a new chapter. It would be good to review the material. You know, there's not a lot of reading, so if you wanted to just reread what we covered in the last session, the last 6 weeks, that would be good. Or you could look at the past orientations. Or look on the web. You know, people post really wonderful reflections on the website. And as always, I encourage you to do that more. So we will meet again next Sunday. I've been thinking that maybe we should skip the July 4th weekend because a lot of people make plans for that weekend. I have some plans, but I could do it. It'd be a little bit difficult. I was just thinking in general, maybe we should skip that weekend and go on for an extra week. So let's discuss that next time, or let Kathleen know maybe if that creates problems for you at the other end, because then we'd extend it for a week. Let Kathleen know, and we can talk about that next time. Okay. Well, thank you very much, everybody. It's nice to be back in contact, and we'll talk to you next Sunday.